This is Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence, your 8:03 tee time every Sunday morning on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5. Be a part of the show by tweeting Matthew at RealLauro5. Today's show is brought to you by French Lick Resorts, Edwin Watts Golf, Lexington Parks and Recreation, Carroll and Stone Insurance, Man O' War Golf, and Griffin Gate Resort and Spa. Now let's join your host, Matthew Lawrence, for Backspin Golf.
Merry friend, is the greatest Rick's on Cleveland's XEO rep ever. What a way to start Backspin, huh? Sean's eyebrows are raised. Good morning, everybody. And good morning, once again, not with me in the studio, Perry French, in a car in somewhere. This is like, where's Waldo? Where are you this morning?
I'm on my way to Owensboro and Henderson, Kentucky, and then I'll finish the day in Hopkinsville. So I'm making the kind of a pseudo-Western swing here this week, and I'll finish the week out Friday back in Paducah and an event out there on Saturday. So yeah, it's great weather, great time of the year, and a lot of things happen. So yeah, just trying to
get around.
Trying to get around. It's keeping me busy, so it's good.
Owensboro, America. Hopkinsville, America. Paducah, America. Let's remember how we like to call these places. We know they're in Kentucky. Anyway, well, I miss you. As always, I miss you.
I miss soon, being there as well.
Yeah, soon we'll be together. Sean, pull up that song. Someday we'll be together again. You remember that song? Not really. No. Okay.
No.
All right. Here's what I want to talk with you about on this edition of Backspin Golf. Let's talk a little golf, and then I want to talk to you about, we're getting into the transition phase of our golf season, and I want to talk to you about that, and we'll explain what we mean. First, your thoughts, once again, on the interminably long golf season, that is the 1920 golf season. Joaquin Niemann, 20 years old, goes out, wins the first tournament of the year, second tournament of the year. And this kid's the real deal. I mean, he won by 6 shots. It's not the elite fields that we know, but it doesn't matter.
It really doesn't matter because the field is a professional golf tour event. So these guys all can play. And, you know, it just continues to validate what we've been talking about really all season long and the way the PGA Tour is, quite frankly, speaking of transitioning. Guys that are in there, you know, we had Matthew Wolff win at 20 years old. Joaquin Niemann, 20 years old. What? This is not what used to be the PGA Tour norm, right? Players didn't win at 20. That happened. That was a complete anomaly when a Jack Nicklaus won at 20.
Right,
but
or
that
a Tiger.
Was Jack Nicklaus.
Right.
That was Jack Nicklaus. That was Tiger Woods.
Right.
You know, so we're getting this influx of tremendously talented players who, again, not many of us know about, and they're going to be putting wins on the board in certainly a field that would be, like I said, not quite the superstar field, but those kids also will show up when the superstars are there too. They're going to be pushing, and they're ready to win. There's not a lag time, a learning curve, if you will, and so that makes the PGA Tour quite interesting from a perspective of someone who's in the business. For the casual fan, I don't know this kid. Well, guess what? I don't know him either. So it's not like I've, you know, sitting there following these young guys who come out of the tour, the Korn Ferry Tour. Just obviously the new players just graduated from their qualifying, the 25 from the championship, and as well the 25 from the regular season. So, you know, Scottie Scheffler is the only name I truly know that's coming out, but there's two other great stories, and I'm drawing blanks on the names, but there's a 33-year-old who's been out there for 10 years, and then a 43-year-old who's been out there that both got their tour cards this past corn. So what, this is what's going on. I mean, the breadth of what these guys who are continue to, you know, God bless them, to keep trying at 33 and then let alone at 43 to make your way onto the PGA Tour, a major accomplishment in their careers, and the young guys who are coming out of college and just ready to put you know, put their stake in the game and create their own, their own legacies. And these guys are ready to do it. The Joaquin Niemans and Matthew Walsh they're all going to do it. So yeah. We'll just get right, sit back. And the long season that is the golf season now is the wraparound season. Before we know it, probably in a couple of years, they'll have 52 weeks of tournament golf.
That's where we're going.
I think we are. Yeah. We're going to head to 52 weeks of tournament golf, but there is no off season. It's exciting. I think it's exciting for golf.
Yeah. By the way, Robbie Shelton is the guy you were talking about who led the tournament after the first round and played really well. He shot a second round. He shot a 62 in the second round. We have to say, this tournament had Bryson DeChambeau, Bubba Watson. There were guys there who we all know. Even if we didn't know a lot of them. By the way, the first golfer, Joaquin Niemann, from Chile to win on the PGA Tour.
And, there you go.
And so when he was 18, he played there at 18 and finished tied for 29th. He was tied for 5th there last year and shot 64 in the final round each of those 3 years. So this has been coming with him for a while.
Yeah,
I mean, and don't forget,
it's not a pop. It's not a pop up thing. These guys have been training, preparing, and the competitive golf that they're getting to play before they make their way to the PGA Tour is second to none. They're very seasoned in lots of different ways. So it's good. I think it's going to push the tour to another level.
Yeah.
And that's what Tiger Woods did, as we know. And that's where this Tiger effect, these are kids that were all, you know, barely born.
It is Tiger effect. That's right.
Yeah. Tiger was.
Right. Okay. And let's not forget about Victor Hovland.
Yeah, who, you absolutely. Know, my gosh, how many consecutive rounds in the 60s?
He has
the tour record?
17 consecutive rounds in the 60s on tour, which he's not playing this week, but next week he will. Bob Estes, I'm shocked. If you could have given me a million guesses, that's not the name I would have come up with, but Bob Estes holds that record, and he has a chance. Yeah, he has a chance in the first round if he shoots in the 60s, which he will, by the way. He'll be the record holder on the PGA Tour. I mean, some of this stuff is just amazing.
It really is. It's fun to watch, and you don't know where it's coming from. That's
right.
The thing. You don't know where it's coming from, so that's why we tune in every week.
Who's these next guys? Okay. Before we get to our little discussion about transition season golf, thoughts. Jerry Foltz is on this show as well a little bit later from the Golf Channel. He was in Scotland covering the Solheim Cup. Thoughts on the Solheim Cup? Did you get to watch any of it?
I did watch. I didn't get to watch the first 2 days because to follow it just through some highlights, but I did watch Sunday morning's singles.
Incredible.
It was phenomenal golf. The matches were aside from a couple, but were all very close. And as it turned out, you know, the U.S. got flipped on the last six holes of the event, the last four matches that were looking like they were going to pull out that lead tie, which would retain the cup. And then to have it end that dramatically with Suzanne Peterson knocking down that, well, first of all, great shot into the green.
Yeah.
I know she didn't know that was to win the overall Solheim Cup, but she knew she had to make the putt. And then she had almost sucked it back in the hole for a three, had the seven-footer, and just knocked it in the hole. Knew a foot from the hole was in. And then she retires.
Right.
Hello.
The great thing is she said, I just read this, she said that she had no idea she was going to retire.
Right.
It was a spur of the moment, and she's sticking to it. It's not like, oh, wait a minute, I didn't really mean it. I mean,
if there was anything that was serendipitous about it, was that, right?
Yes.
She was probably thinking about retiring over the next year or two.
Yeah.
And my goodness, what a way to go out. She said, look, this is,
I can't do any better than this.
This is it. I've got, I guess this is the time. So great on her, and just a phenomenal you know, for women's golf in general. Who says September golf isn't fun to watch?
Oh,
right?
Boy. Yeah. Yeah. Well, the Solheim Cup has always been, I'm going to talk to Jerry about this too. The Solheim Cup has always been one of my favorite sports events, not just golf events, because it's not only great golf, but the sportsmanship that's always exhibited in, and not always exhibited in the Ryder Cup, but in the Solheim Cup is always exhibited every single time, no matter what the outcome is. It's very uplifting to me, I guess is the word.
Yeah.
And this was certainly no exception.
Yeah, it was great. Coming down to the last putt, last match.
Right.
That's what everybody in the, you know, in the business and the game of golf hopes it can come down to, and doesn't happen very often. So
right.
Pretty special.
Yep.
Pretty
All special. Right. We got about 3 minutes left.
Okay.
This is a transition time. If we want to change our swing, we're getting into the time of the season where we do it, right?
Absolutely. I mean, listen, it's winter time around the corner, unfortunately. But the one thing for people who are thinking about changing their golf swing, this is the time of year I would recommend doing it, because two things. One is you're not going to be tempted to go play golf with your buddies, with your friends on a regular basis because it's the season. And what happens to players when they try to make a swing change? I don't mean just a lesson from your pro, a tweak here and there. I'm talking about changing your golf game, all of the factors that, you know, how you go about playing golf to become a better player. You have to have the time to do that. And if you're trying to play golf, play some competitive golf, or just even to post a score, like I said, you want to shoot 80. And when you go out there and all of a sudden you're working on your golf swing in the middle of a round and it's 95 or you don't even finish enough holes to post a score, you're going to be pretty frustrated and you're going to revert back to your old ways.
Right.
So it's a stop and stuff. So don't do that. Play the season out, work on your short game, things that are very tangible to you during the season. And yes, maybe a swing tweak, a swing thought that you have. But when you're going to change your golf swing, make some physical changes, not just yourself physically, if it's working out, doing different things to make yourself stronger, more flexible, those, it's a great time here to do that, to get yourself into the routine. But to do the physical changes to your golf swing, getting with a swing coach and start knocking down the fundamentals of changing your golf swing, this is the time to do it. Weather's okay to practice for a lot of good days to get out there. You won't be tempted to go play golf. And when it's not good weather, you can go inside, go to the heated bays at Man of War Golf.
Correct. Man of War.
And hit some shots and keep working on your game. You don't have to stop working. You can go indoors.
Yeah.
Right? You can go indoors. You can do some, we'll call it dry land training, if it will. But things that you can do to make yourself better, but not be tempted to revert back. It typically takes about three months of fairly significant practice and, you know, continual practicing on the techniques to get it to where you're going to be comfortable with it and have the confidence with it to put it in play on the golf course.
Right.
Pulling that trigger and making that swing and not reverting back to your old way. So break your old habits, break your swing down. This is the time of year to start looking at doing it. Get with a swing coach, put a plan together. And you could have a really productive winter, if
right.
you will.
You know,
doing that and coming out in the spring and being ready to play.
I'm one of those that always tries to change my swing while I'm playing in the middle of a round. Always.
I hear you.
I'll watch a video and I'll go, I'll do this tomorrow. And we all know how that works.
Well, it may work for that one round.
It's just going to be
short-lived. That's the problem with it.
It's
a Band-Aid, as we call
yes.
it in the swing doctor's game.
Yes.
And Band-Aids are okay.
Right.
But when you put a Band-Aid on something, you typically have to put another Band-Aid on something.
Right. Yes, so you do. I'm a walking Band-Aid. Yes. Okay.
You're walking bandage.
Bandage. Yeah. Before I let you go, you want to say hi to Chris Mascaro?
Hello, Chris Mascaro.
Yeah. Hi, Chris Mascaro.
I'm going to be on the show in a couple weeks.
I think oh, you are? Oh, really?
Yes. We're going to talk about all the new Cleveland Frogs that we've talked about.
Oh, well that's together. Great. So, I'm glad you're going to be on with him again. Okay.
Well, he likes to be able to piggyback the launch of the new products. He likes to give me a chance to talk to people about why our new launcher. And you and I have done that, so you always get first dibs.
Yeah, all right. Okay. Anyway, if you want to hear that, go to Next on the Tee on podbean.com and listen to Chris and his great, great podcast. All right, goodbye. Have a good day. Be careful.
Be well. Thanks, bud.
All right.
Talk to you.
See ya.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by French Lick Resort. Visit them online at FrenchLick.com.
Welcome back. I swear, and I say it all the time, and Sean hears it all the time, I'm an incredibly blessed guy because I get to talk to people that I admire and respect and love their work and love who they are as people on this show. And not many people get to do what I do. This is another one of those instances on Backspin Golf, because joining us now is Jerry Foltz from the Golf Channel, who, A, has no idea where he is, and I'll explain this. And he has agreed to talk to me, having absolutely no concept of probably of any brain function, because he's jet-lagged and he's walking up and down golf courses. And it's such a pleasure for me to have him on. Hi, Jerry.
Matthew, thank you for having me on, and you're right. I woke up this morning, and I was wondering which country I was in, not which city or which state I was in, but that happens quite often, and I kind of pinch myself when it does. It's a little surreal because my life is so blessed to be able to travel around these great places and watch great golf. And yeah, a little jet lagged. Suites with the unlimited happy hour for free last night, so a little bottle lagged as well.
Boy. All right. Well, yeah, but you're a pro. That's what being a pro means, is you can handle stuff like that, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. It's just a lot of training.
Now, years of practice. Now, for people that our listeners, we have, obviously, it's a huge golf audience, but there are a lot of people that are listening that don't know what we're referencing here. And in this part of your life, last weekend, you were at what I consider one of the great golf events I've ever watched. And I've been watching golf for a long time. And then you get on a plane, and we're speaking of the Solheim Cup, which was at Glen Eagles in Scotland. And then you get on a plane, and when I got in touch with you about joining us, you told me that you could do it. You were at Sanderson Farms in Mississippi, of all places, covering the PGA Tour now. Days after getting off that plane from Scotland. That's what we're talking about. I couldn't do it. I'm just telling you, I couldn't do it.
I had about 16 hours at home, though, so I got a little sleep, did a couple loads of laundry.
There you go.
Repacked, and now I'm here. But no, you get used to that. We don't, commentators and professional golfers, anybody else who makes their living around golf, doesn't make money when you're not working. We tend to go in long stretches like this, and it's been a brutal summer, but it's also the time of year where you don't want to be home in Florida. I get a lot of the winter off and get to enjoy the fruits of the labor then. And,
yeah.
It's a blast. It is quite often, though, you wake up and you have no idea where you're at, and it takes you a minute. You got to look outside or look at the phone and see what city you're in,
yep.
And then it all starts coming back to you.
Yeah, but as I said to you, that happens to me, and I'm not traveling anywhere. I mean, there's a lot of times I have no idea where I am either, but that's another show we could talk about.
But that Solheim Cup was something special, you're right. There's some people calling it one of the best sporting events, period, of the year.
Yeah.
And certainly one of the best golf events they've ever seen. And, you know, I tweeted out as soon as it was over on Sunday that Europe got the cup, but women's golf gets the win. And some of the replies were fantastic. The one that I really like to kind of show the elevation of women's golf in the last few years is that it wasn't women's golf that won, it was golf that won. 90,000 the game, and about how good the ladies played and the incredible demonstration they put on, and most important part, completely in the spirit of the game. There were no out-of-control fans. There was no bad blood anywhere. It was mutual respect, and they battled for nothing more than bragging rights and played the most intense golf of their entire lives without a dime on the line. It was pretty cool.
Well, and this is what you do. You put things so well and in such great perspective. When you first got over there, and those of us that follow golf, you know, couldn't wait for this event, because the Solheim Cup, typically, there's something different about it than the Ryder Cup. And I'm not sure... I don't even know how to say this. Is it because we're talking about the women here as opposed to men, and these events seem to be, this seems to be every Solheim Cup we talk about it, although the play this year and it being at Glen Eagles and Katrina Matthews and all of that was particularly intense and brilliant. There's something different feeling to me about the Solheim Cup and the Ryder Cup. Am I nuts, or do you feel that too?
No. I put a lot of thought into that. And I don't really, nobody really has the answer. But
right.
I think in general, culturally, people are nicer to women than they are to men.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean by that is there was not one single unruly fan, no obnoxious remarks in the gallery at all. 90,000 of them out there passing
wow.
out the game. And I think it's simply because people, men in general, are nicer to women culturally than mm-hmm. they are to men. I did the Ryder Cup at Hazeltine just a few years ago. I guess that's, 3 years ago now?
Yeah.
And some of the stuff I heard in the gallery toward the players, wives, it was just vile. It was wrong.
Yep.
And, you know, there weren't many, but those few gave everybody a bad name.
Yeah.
I've never, ever heard anything like that at a Solheim Cup. And maybe it's just, again, like I said, people treat women nicer, or maybe it's just the type of fan it attracts, because it's women's golf. Of it to be a lot more mainstream than it is right now. It's elevating, but it's mm-hmm. not there. So you have to be passionate about the game and about the women's game to want to come watch it.
Right.
And the 90,000 of them were. Actually, I think it was more than that.
It was
crazy
yeah.
out there. Yeah. And that's the best I can come up with. It's exactly what Jack Nicklaus talked about when he made the concession to Tony Jacklin back
yes.
in '69 at the Ryder Cup. Even though his captain Sam Snead. Didn't like it one bit, the old curmudgeon himself.
Yes, that's shocking.
That is the spirit of the game, that this was intended to be. This is for bragging rights and nothing more. It's an exhibition, and we're
right.
supposed to play it in the spirit of the game. And that's what I think the Solheim Cup embodies better than anybody.
Again, very well said. The matches, the different matches that we have, there's something about it's why people love watching, even though they are exhibitions, the Ryder Cup and the Solheim Cup. There's something about two-person teams playing in different matches the first 2 days, and then everything on the line, mano a mano on Sunday in the singles matches. And talk to us a little bit about your feeling about, give us a sense of what the two captains, Julie Engster and Katrina Matthews, go through each of those days and setting up their pairings, and then finally how they put the singles out.
Well, they try. Julie is subscribed to the Paul Azinger pod theory, and it's not a bad theory at all. But they try and match up players based on their game and their personalities, and that's a really hard thing to do. Golf's a very selfish sport and an individual
yeah.
pursuit, so that's a very difficult thing to do. They have a good idea based on the early week preparation and their thoughts leading into it of who they're going to pair in the opening matches on Thursday morning, which is typically always a foursome match, alternate shot.
Mm-hmm.
Based on that, they have a great idea what they're going to do in the afternoon, and maybe even a bit of an idea what they're going to do the next day. But the way those players are performing and the way they're getting along is going to affect it quite a bit. So there's a great deal of thought that goes into it, and you don't get much time to consult with them once the first ball gets in the air on Thursday, because you have to have your pairings for the afternoon sessions done
right.
Before the morning sessions are even finished. And then you have to have the ones for the next morning done very shortly after the afternoon sessions have finished. So you have to have a game plan in mind, but be able to adapt on the fly for the best of your team. And you have to, as Julie did marvelously, as did Trina Matthews, you have to be able to put your players' feelings on the back burner and not care about those and care about solely just the overall good of the team.
Yeah. It's an amazing dynamic, I think, to watch. And Sunday, one of the incredible things, and I keep thinking about this, even though it was a week ago, and I think I put this on Twitter, in a competition that was that intense, starting Friday morning all the way till the end of Sunday, everybody talks about that a sport is a game of inches. Well, in the space of about an 8 or 10 minute period, we had two or maybe even three putts that had they gone in and missed by an inch, the United States would have won the Solheim Cup, and they didn't, and so we had Suzanne Pedersen win the cup with that putt. It changed so quickly at the end.
Allie McDonald had a putt for par on 15 to go one up, and she it caught the top lip and didn't go in, and then Bronte Law made about a 10-footer for bogey to have the hole.
Right.
Allie had another putt on 16 to make birdie and force Bronte's hand to keep from going one down, a much easier putt than Bronte had. And Bronte made her downhiller to go one up. And then Allie had about a 7 or 8 footer for par on 17 to get the match to 18 all square, or one down to have a chance at that point. And hit the best putt ever, and it didn't go in. Marina Alex had a 10-footer on the final hole against Suzanne Pedersen and hit it exactly where she aimed. And as Judy Rankin said, that putt had been breaking left all day long, and it looked like it hit something and went right.
Yeah.
And didn't go in. If that goes in, it's over.
Right.
The U.S. retains the cup.
Right.
And she hit a great putt. But I think getting back to the earlier point, it's gone viral in the last few days, but sportsmanship award of the year of the decade has to go to Marina Alex for reaction after Suzanne made that putt.
Yes.
And that picture of her embracing her, and she was genuinely happy for Suzanne, not sad for her team. And I think that speaks volumes to the character of Marina, number one.
Right.
And just the overall spirit of the competition. I met Marina's parents on the course when I was following her on, I guess it was Saturday's matches, and I never knew them before. They don't travel with her or come out to many tournaments.
Yeah.
But I just want to congratulate you all. Everybody knows she's a great player and what have you. I go, but you have raised one fantastic human being there. And as a parent myself, that's more important than anything else. And she displayed it on Sunday.
Yeah, I still get goosebumps thinking about that. As I watched it, that was the feeling I had with that hug and how hard in that moment for her, you know, not winning that cup for the United States, but to be able to do that was amazing. We have just a few minutes left with you, but I want to talk to you about you. Forget about this Solheim Cup and like stuff. I want to talk about you for a minute.
A few minutes might be too long.
Yeah. See, here you go again with that self-deprecating kind of humor that you have.
It's easy to be self-deprecating when you suck.
Oh, here we go. Write that down. No, I'm going to put that on my wall. It's easy to be self-deprecating when you suck. Let's make a sign and put it up here. You were a pretty darn good golfer in college.
Relative.
All right, let me talk, okay? Stop interrupting me when I'm talking about you, okay? I didn't realize this, but right after you turned pro, you were involved in a really, really bad car accident, right?
Yeah, rear-ended by a drunk who was going 50. Not the highlight of my life.
No, but... To go from that, and then you came back, and what was the Nike Tour back then, and you played on the Nike Tour and did fairly well on the Nike Tour, to come back from that kind of accident. And then while you were still competitive, you decided to get into what you're doing now. And by the way, this will be the start of this. You do it as well as anybody there is. You know what? Let me just say this. Now I'm angry. Now, just hold on. Let me get this out. Sean knows this, and my listeners know this. I have a real problem with golf coverage, especially in this country. I'm talking about with the analysts and everybody that's involved on that. I love European Tour coverage. I loved Renton Laidlaw. I love subtlety. I like humor when it's valid. And there are very few people... and very few tournaments I watch where I don't hit mute at least 15 or 20 times during the broadcast. You, and particularly somebody you just worked with and work with a lot, Judy Rankin, are as good as it gets to me. Because you tell us things that as golfers we want to hear and be explained, and yet you do it in a way that is so great and your humor is great on the golf course, and I know that's not always easy when you're doing a broadcast. So there.
Well, thank you. The appropriate thing to say is thank you.
That's right.
To be lumped in Judy Rankin is that's the highest praise I've ever had, because she is, in my opinion, and the best there's ever been. I had I had really good training. The guy who hired me and turned out to be my best friend in life, Keith Hirschland, who's a friend of yours, was very, very hard on commentators, really hard on commentators. And you learned really quickly the right way to do it and the wrong way to do it. And I think most of the people who came up under Keith and who are still working in the industry are considered some of the best technically because of that kind of training. And the only real other advice I ever had was from my mother, my late mother, and from Ken Venturi, who I sought out when I first started getting into commentary. And he always said, Ken's words were, always respect the game, first and foremost. Call him as you see him, and remember that you're doing TV. It's a visual medium, not radio. And the one thing Keith Hirschland used to drill into us was, you're supposed to tell us what we're not seeing. Tell us what we're seeing, because it's obvious. Tell us what we're not seeing. And that therein lies the art of doing commentary for any sport. And I think that's why Tony Romo is so great at football instantly, because he tells you what you're not seeing and tells you what to expect.
Right.
And it's hard to do. It's really easy to sit there and say, oh, he missed it on the high side. No kidding.
Yeah,
I just saw that.
Have you been looking at my texts with Keith Hirschland during golf tournaments? Have you been looking at my phone? I mean, because these are the texts.
He texts me, too. So.
Yeah. Oh, okay. These are the texts that go back and forth constantly with us about, he's got a three-footer. It's an inch. It's short. Oh, really? Oh, you left it short? Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. I'm going to let you go. I know you have, you're working again today. You'll be out there at Sanderson Farms. Is it hot? Make sure you stay hydrated.
It is really hot, and Scotland was so cold. I feel like I'm in my own human vortex this week. It's a neat tournament. First year they've had a standalone event, not being an opposite field event. They're all excited about it. Sanderson stepped up big time, as the community. Raises a ton of money for the children's hospital here locally, which is the only children's hospital in all of Mississippi.
Wow.
It's a truly a community event, and I get to go out and follow last year's champion, Cameron Champ, Bill Haas, and Ryan Armour, who 2 years ago at 41 years old got his first win as a journeyman PGA Tour player. So it'll be a really fun day, 2 to 6 Eastern time. I know you'll be tuning in, and text me
when
I say something stupid, and hopefully your thumbs don't get sore.
Yeah, well, you don't say anything stupid, and I'll talk to you. I got a couple tips I'd like to give Cameron Champ, because I think he could hit it farther. I think he's holding back. Maybe I'll have you pass along a couple of thoughts I have about his swing. Holy cow. All right. All kidding aside, I can't thank you enough. This has been one of the joys of me doing this show since I started. And
thank you.
I'll talk to you soon. Okay. Thanks so much, Jerry.
All right. Bye.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Lexington Parks and Recreation. Book your tee time at one of their 5 public courses at lexingtonky.gov. Play Golf Lexington.
Welcome back. Once again, it's time for the Dan the Man segment. How about that? Not bad, huh, Sean? Our buddy, Dan Houser. The stiff shaft guy. You can follow him on Twitter at Dan Houser Golf, HAUSER, or go to thestiffshaft.com. It's a fantastic website. Fantastic. Hi, Dan the Man.
How's it going?
All right. It's going well. Thank you. I hope you are. Before we get started with our weekly fun, I just want to repeat what just happened before we came on the air. Our listeners, we talk about golf, but we also talk about other things, and this is important. I like to think of this, Dan, as a little public service announcement.
All right.
Sean, everybody that listens to either Matthew and Mikey or Backspin, because I've mentioned it, knows that I'm a cinnamon roll Pop-Tart guy. And I have them every morning with coffee when I come into the office or at home on the weekends. Every morning. I've been eating Pop-Tarts my entire life, just about. Sean just took a bite of something that his lovely wife brought from Trader Joe's. a cherry pomegranate Pop-Tart. And you would have thought, I can't even think of what that face was that he made. He could not, you actually swallowed it though, right, Sean? You didn't see, that would have been on the wall, Dan. If that were me, that would have been on the wall. He actually
swallowed. You know what, we should just add, just in case she's listening, that it was very nice of her, that the thought to bring him something to eat today, whether it ended up being good or not, the thought, it was a thought that counts. Now, on that note, though, I will say, I'm a huge fan of Trader Joe's. It's like my favorite place to shop these days. However, yeah, there are certain limitations and certain things that I won't even touch at a Trader Joe's. And I feel like when it comes to Pop-Tarts, give me a cinnamon or a strawberry, yeah, or the chocolate one. But pomegranate does not need to be in a Pop-Tart. It can be in many other things in life. It does not need to be involved in a Pop-Tart.
Thank you. This is
leave us the sanctity of our regular Pop-Tarts, please.
That's the word I was looking for, sanctity. And it applied to Pop-Tarts in particular. Great point about Belle and the thought being the important thing here. Well done, Belle. But next time, before you bring it home, just text Sean and say,
or just you know what? I understand that we're, you know, adults now and we're supposed to be, yeah, more defined and redefined. Forget that. Give me a chocolate one or a cinnamon one or a strawberry one. There's certain things that we can still be kids about, and it's got to be Pop-Tarts has to be on that list.
Oh, ooh! Now we got into a whole, you know, kids versus adults thing here. This is what I like.
I'm also the same guy that will willingly go to the store to purchase Lunchables at my age. So, you know, what do I know?
Yeah, no, that's a perfect way to wrap that up. Because I know all about Lunchables because I, in fact, have kids who I guess are a lot like you. Now I'm
finding
out.
I don't even have kids, so I don't even have an excuse to buy Lunchables. I just buy them because I like them.
That's what I mean, you kid, you. All right. This is why we have you on every week, for your expert opinions about things like this. And golf, of course. Let's start with, because your Twitter account is so great, always. Let's start with a little comment you made. Jerry Foltz joined us on the show this week. He's just fantastic. And he was at the Solheim Cup, obviously covering it. And we talked a little about the ending of that Solheim Cup, but you put it in a great way. The putt that Suzanne Pedersen made to actually clinch the Solheim Cup for Europe. What were your impressions of that moment?
Well, first off, before we even get to that moment, I got to say one thing. It takes a lot for me to get jealous these days just because, you know, I'm blessed with what I do and I get to do a lot, yeah, of really fun things. Man, was I jealous of any single person who got to go over there and cover that Solheim Cup.
Oh, yeah.
God, can you imagine the experience of being over there and being able to watch that? And,
seconded.
And, you know, as you said about Susan Pedersen, and I mentioned it on my Twitter account, I mean, we have seen the quote-unquote walk-off in sports all the time. I mean, if it's a literal, you know, in a game of baseball, we've seen it as the retirement goes. I mean, you know, when you think of the ultimate walk-offs in sports, you think of John Elway, who won a Super Bowl and immediately retired.
Right.
You know, you think of Michael Jordan and all that he did before he finally retired. And eventually one of these days, you know, we're going to have a similar scenario, you would assume, with Tom Brady, whenever he finally decides to hang it up.
10 years from now.
At the age of 70 or whatever it is that he finally, you know, the robot pieces inside of his body finally start to decompose. But I don't want to say ever, because you never say never in anything in life, but I think it's going to be very, very, very tough to ever have something of a walk-off that will compare to what we just saw this past weekend with Suzanne Pedersen.
Yeah.
Because the only thing that I could even think of that could top something like that, just because of the stakes and competing for your country and the level that it's at, and, you know, how that tournament is viewed in golf. The only thing I can think of is maybe if you saw something where somebody won an Olympic gold medal,
yeah,
and then said, all right, I'm done right afterwards. Because, yeah, I mean, other than what was on the line in an event like that, there's really not a lot that can top that,
yeah,
in terms of a walk-off. So it's just, you know,
yeah,
it was fantastic. It was incredible. Obviously, you know, it was a bummer to see as an American, because the Americans lost. But, man, if you're going to lose, at least you lose in a way like that, and not like we've seen in a lot of Ryder Cups lately, where it's just a blowout. By Sunday, it's not even a competition anymore.
Right. No, that's a great point. And as we've discussed on this show, the level of intensity and sportsmanship in that event was really second to none for a long time. And I mentioned this with Jerry, and I don't know how you feel about this, but I love the Ryder Cup, but I love the Solheim Cup more, I think. And it really hit home to me this past Solheim Cup with what went on. The golf was absolutely phenomenal. It was a matter of two putts being missed by inches, or else it's a different story and we don't get the walk-off by Suzanne Pettersson. And then what followed afterwards, Marina Alex, who is just such an incredible person, and she's a great golfer too, but that whole scene with her hugging Suzanne Pettersson on the final green was amazing after how incredibly difficult it was to lose the Solheim Cup like that for her.
Well, not only that, I mean, yeah, absolutely. Of course, the sportsmanship, I mean, you know, sportsmanship in the men's game is obviously great. You know, one could argue the sportsmanship level in the women's game trumps that even by
yes.
far. And obviously we saw a perfect example of that on after that final putt.
Right.
What also stood out to me too were two things. One was the fact that Suzanne Pettersson had no plans on that retirement. She literally hit that putt, and then the cameras were in front of her. She goes, "You know what?
It's I'm
not
done.
Really going to get better than this.
Right.
I'm done." I mean, I kind of compared it to, I'm someone who's never had a hole in one in my life, and I just think to myself, if and when that day comes, I mean, if I get a hole in one on like the second hole of the day, I'm done. Like my round is never going to get better than that. My golf accolades are probably never going to get better than that. It's like, okay, go out on top. And then the other thing too is, you know, a lot of people were struck because this is what we do in life. You know, whatever your view of personally upon this is, but whenever something happens in a women's sport, we automatically, the first thing we try to do is to compare it to what would be the equivalent of it in the men's
right.
side of things.
Right.
And so a lot of people were saying that this would have been that what she did would have been the equivalent of had Tiger, after he won the Masters this past year, just said, "All right, you know what? I got my one final major. I got my one last green
right.
jacket. I'm out. See you later, everyone. Have a good life." But I don't think that's a comparable comparison because, and I say this as no knock absolutely on the Masters or the prestige or
right.
the history of the green jacket. Of course, everyone who has ever picked up a golf club would easily sacrifice fill in the blank whatever body part you want to get a green jacket in their life. But
yeah.
I don't think that's a comparable comparison because the level of what is on the line on a Solheim Cup, which, you know, okay, you want to compare it to the men's game, Ryder Cup. That
right.
would be like somebody after a Ryder Cup saying, "I just hit the winning putt for my country, I'm out." Now, that's a whole different ballgame than a Masters or a U.S. Open or a PGA Championship any of these majors. So you know, the Tiger comparison, while yes, would that have been a holy crap moment if he said, "You know what, here's my, I got a green jacket and I'm out"? Yeah, but I don't think it would have been a level of a holy crap that one was. And also because it's not like anybody knew it beforehand. It literally was the cameras turned on, the microphone was placed in front of her, and she said, "All right, it doesn't get much better than this, I'm out." I mean, nobody was expecting, which I think added to the, not just the shock value, but I guess the coolness factor
yes.
of it happening.
Yes. And she is pretty cool and has always been. Cool.
If Tiger had said after he won the green jacket, the Masters this year, "All right, you know what, I'm out," I don't think it would have shocked that many people. I think a lot of people would have been like, "You know what, that kind of makes sense, man. You got your one more, you
right.
got to prove everybody wrong, and now you're going out on your terms." But I think this was a general, legitimate shock to everyone in the golf community,
yeah.
including her own teammates,
right.
for crying out loud.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She was just like, "All right, I'm out. Thanks, for everybody.
Right.
It's been fun."
It was great. It was fantastic. All right, we got a couple minutes left. Here's what I want to ask you about. We just saw, and I saw it on your timeline, Rory McIlroy skipped the Irish Open this past July. And now it comes out, he has made a statement that once again he may skip his own national tournament. But this reasoning is incredible, and you had a great thought about it. Why is he might skip this event again?
So basically, it's from my understanding, you don't ever want to put any words in people's mouths.
Right.
But certainly from the quote, it sounds like to me that he's basically going to skip this tournament because he wants to spend the 4th of July holiday weekend with his lovely wife and her family and who are his in-laws, who are all very much American, and they're all from this country. And
yes.
so obviously, like the rest of us, they're going to celebrate the 4th of July and our country's independence. And it's just funny to me because, I mean, he's lived in the United States for a very long time now. I don't believe he still has the house, but for a while he was practically neighbors with me. You know, he lived right up the road from
yeah.
me. I used to drive past his home, you know, several times a day. Not in a stalking way.
I was going to say, that's wrong. but go ahead.
Well, we lived basically on the same street, just farther apart.
Right.
And I lived in the, you know, the normal people part. And he
right.
lived in the, you know, the yeah. I make $10 million every
the
time
rich
I step
people
on a golf course part.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, in order to get around town, there were plenty of times that I had to pass his palatial estate that I didn't actually get to see. You just see the guard gates out front. And you think about, you know,
right.
I'll never live in a place like that. But
right.
besides the point. So at this point, he's lived in the United States long enough. He's already skipping out on work to celebrate the holiday weekend like Americans do. He should be eligible for the U.S. Ryder Cup team at this point. I mean, let's face it.
See, it's
he's,
a great
he's
point.
He's probably more American now than a lot of Americans are. He's skipping out on work to celebrate holiday weekends.
Yeah,
you know,
perfect.
I mean, what's more American than that? So he can sit around and have beers and drink hot dogs. Drink beers and eat hot
yes.
dogs with the family. I mean, that's with the in-laws. I mean, that's about as American as it gets these days on the 4th of July. So,
I
you know
like
what I think
it.
at this point, he might as well just be an American Ryder Cupper now.
I like
Tiger,
it.
Not Tiger. We might as well just add him to the next Ryder Cup team.
All right.
Whoever captain that's going to be.
I think we should bring this up before that and see if we can get a pass through.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and get with the PGA of America on that.
We'll, okay.
When we bring up the what happened with the whole vote for player of the year, we can bring up getting Rory as an honorary American.
We have a lot to talk to them about. All right.
Yeah, we do.
I hope it stops raining down there in Florida where you are so you can play some golf, and we'll talk to you next week.
We'll be good. We're getting out of that rainy point now. Now once we get through these couple hurricane season months, we'll be sitting pretty again.
Yeah, all right. Okay. Good luck.
And then it'll be 90 degrees down here when you're freezing up there, and I'll make sure to rub it in.
All right, thanks. Thanks, pal.
You got it. Always good talking
right.
to you.
See ya.
All right.
Dan the man, Hauser. So cool. All right, that's it for this edition of Backspin Golf. Thank you to Perry French, and Dan Hauser, of course, as always. And an immense thank you to Jerry Fultz. I've been listening to his coverage this week at Sanderson Farms. He's just fantastic and an even better person and guest. So thanks to Jerry. Thanks to our incredible partners, Carol and Stone Insurance Services, Man of War Golf, Griffin Gate, the Marriott Resort, Griffin Gate Resort and Spa, Edwin Watts Golf, French Lick Resort, and Lexington Parks and Rec for their wonderful partnership with us on Backspin Golf. We'll be back next week with another edition on ESPN Sports Radio, 1392.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Man O' War Golf, the golf improvement experts.